From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour is being made at hundreds of Chipotle restaurants across the country. Chipotle has confirmed this week that it stopped serving pork products at roughly a third of its locations after finding out that one of its pork suppliers violated the company's standards on how animals are treated. Last Friday, Chipotle was apparently performing a routine audit when it discovered the issue. Now, Chipotle requires its suppliers to raise pigs in humane conditions with access to the outdoors rather than the conditions often found in large factory operations. Many pigs there are housed in what are known as gestation crates, and many pigs have very little space to move around, let alone go outside. 9 states have banned gestation crates, according to the New York Times. Several others are considering a ban. Today we wanted to hear from Chipotle, and later this hour we're going to look at which local farms are already raising pigs in more humane ways. So our first guest for the hour is Chris Arnold, Communications Director for Chipotle. Chris, how are you? Chris, if you can hear me, and I hope you can, I can't hear you yet. Are you there? There you are. Chris? We can't hear Chris. So Chris, if you're there, just hang on the line. And we'll get Chris back in just a second. He's had a busy 24 hours, 48 hours, I should say. And we're talking to him from Denver. Chris is out, actually, maybe Boulder, Colorado. He'll tell me in just a second. He's talking to us from Colorado, Chipotle headquarters. And once we get this audio glitch fixed, we'll have Chris Arnold on the line with us. So, again, if you're just kind of waking up to the news on this, Chipotle has long made an issue of animal treatment. This is not necessarily a new position for the company, but this is the first time that we have seen them actually sort of pull back on products. And we've got Chris on the line now. Chris, thanks for waiting there. How are you, sir?
I am well, thanks. How are you?
Good. So this is not a new position for the company. I know that animal treatment, high standards are part of the company ethos, but is this the first time Chipotle has essentially pulled back products after you found out a supplier was violating your standards?
It is, and in fact, the pursuit of meat from animals that are raised to a higher welfare standard actually began for us about 15 years ago with pork from pigs raised on open pastures or in deeply bedded barns and without the use of antibiotics. So that's where really the journey for better ingredients began, and now it's the first time we've had to pull something from the restaurants because of an issue like this.
So what happened last week? It happened last Friday and you were doing an audit?
Well, the audit was done sometime earlier in the week.
Okay.
It was a routine audit. We have teams of auditors who are constantly in the field auditing suppliers to be sure they're adhering to all of our protocols. And the report of that audit was completed on Thursday, and in a meeting on Friday to review the findings based on red flags raised by the auditors, the decision was made that we would suspend this supplier and not serve any pork that we had from them in our system.
How do you end up in a contract with a supplier? And did they change their practices from what they had previously been doing? Was there a miscommunication about your expectations?
Yeah, we're not entirely sure, you know, sort of how the issues arose. You know, our standards are clearly articulated to suppliers, and suppliers sign contracts and affidavits and purchase agreements and all of those things. You know, saying that their practices adhere to those protocols. But that's really only the first step to ensuring proper compliance and proper animal welfare. Beyond that, of course, we have a regular auditing program. And the take from the auditors or the takeaway was not so much that the suppliers were deliberately misleading us, but perhaps it was more related to poor systems for kind of managing inventory and things like that that led to some breakdowns. And because of that, we opted to suspend the supplier. We have terminated suppliers outright based on the nature of violations. In this case, we suspended the supplier, and we would, certainly leave the door open to working with them again if the issues were addressed to our satisfaction. I think fundamentally these are good people who are trying to do the right thing, and somewhere in the system there was a breakdown on that.
Talking to Chris Arnold from Chipotle. Mark on Twitter writes to us, "Bravo, Chipotle, I love carnitas, but I can wait." And that's sort of an interesting question, Chris. How long? Well, first of all, about a third of your Chipotle locations cross country is hundreds of locations, right?
It is, yes.
And how long are they going to be out on carnitas and pork products?
Well, the short answer is we don't know. But first, let me say thanks to Mark on Twitter. And we certainly hope that there are a lot of carnitas fans who have that that same outlook. We're not entirely sure how long the outage will go because we don't know yet what the fix is. You know, we're talking about in the order of a third of our pork supply, and that's a lot to put back together. And we're looking at a lot of different avenues to do that. We're looking at getting more pork from current suppliers. Our longtime partners at Nyman Ranch have already said they have, I believe, another 15 or 20% above what we're currently purchasing from them that we can have pretty immediate access to, and we'll take all of that for sure. You know, there may be some other additions we can make from other suppliers to help recover some of that. We're looking at adding to the cuts we use. Our carnitas are made with braised pork shoulder, and we're right now in the process of testing pork loin to see if that would be a good substitute. And if we can do something like that, then that's another avenue. And of course, we'll look for additional suppliers. You know, there may be some, you know, probably much smaller that meet our protocols that we weren't already working with. But, you know, to get a sense for how long this might last is really going to depend on how much more pork we can turn up through each of those avenues.
We've got a few more minutes with Chris Arnold from Chipotle and then we're going to turn it over to some local farmers who are going to talk about their practices with raising animals. If you want to join the conversation, it's 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI, 263-9994. Chris, this is an interesting sort of development for me as an observer, because when it comes to animal standards and treatment, smaller operations, let's say there's a single restaurant instead of a chain or a franchise, it's probably easier on a smaller scale. The larger scale you go, you've got to purchase more of the product, and it's probably harder to, again, have those checks in place, auditing in place, and clearly Chipotle's thought about that. But does it cost more? Does it cost Chipotle more to only work with animal product suppliers that are conforming to these standards of animal treatment? Does that cost you more?
Yeah, it does. And in fact, as a percentage of revenue, Chipotle has the highest or among the highest food cost in the industry. I mean, we tend to spend for every dollar in revenue we make, we spend about 34 cents on the ingredients that we use to make our food. When we started serving responsibly raised pork from the farms of Nyman Ranch, you know, 15 years ago or so, we had to increase the price of a carnitas burrito or order of tacos because the pork costs so much more. And when we did that, at the time, carnitas were about $4.50, and we increased it by a dollar, which at that price point is a really significant percentage. And what we saw was, you know, people really responded well to it. Along with that price change, we accompanied that with some in-store communications talking about why we had done it. We made posters that had beautiful black and white photography of some of the Nyman Ranch farmers. One gentleman named Dwayne Dorenkamp, who has since retired, and headlines that said, "We know exactly where our pork comes from, Dwayne," and it told their story, and people really loved this story, and were willing to pay more for
sure,
for food that they recognized was raised in a better way, and that really gave us a lot of confidence moving forward to look at all of the ingredients we use and trying to find better sources for them.
Chris, I hope you've got time to. We have a few callers who just want to sort of congratulate you. This is Charles in the city of Rochester. Go ahead, Charles. You're on with Chris Arnold from Chipotle. Charles, are you there? Now I can't hear Charles. hold on a sec, Charles. Start over. We've got you now. Go ahead.
Okay, thank you. Chris and Evan, I just wanted to say I'm a member of PETA. I haven't eaten factory farmed meat in 15 years. And I have a real hard time convincing anyone that this is a better route to take for nutrition and for animal rights. What Chipotle is doing is fabulous, but it is just the tip of the iceberg, and I so hope it raises people's consciousness of this vital issue. No one is tolerant of cats or dogs or puppies being treated cruelly, but most people do not extend that to farm animals.
I think you're right, Charles, and thanks for the comment. You know, I am often reminded when I hear people, consumers speak to the issue of animal welfare. I spoke on a panel several years ago at the National Cattlemen's Beef Conference with a gentleman named Mel Coleman, whose family founded Coleman Natural Meats, which is here in Colorado, and they were pioneers in this more humane meat standard, or in these more humane animal protocols. And somebody in the audience asked Mel, why it matters how animals are raised when they're just going to be slaughtered and eaten. And I thought Mel had the best answer to that I've ever heard. And he said, well, you're going to die too. Does it matter how you live your life up to that point? And it's a really fair point, and you know, frankly, we wish there were other large restaurants and large markets that had the standards that we do. If that were the case, then we wouldn't be so squeezed when something like this happens.
Charles, thank you so much for the call. And let me just real briefly read a couple more quick comments before I let Chris go, because a lot's come in on Twitter. Here's Jeff saying, I definitely love bacon and animals, and I support this kind of decision. Tim writes, we don't have to wait for government to pass laws. There are a lot of great small local farms you can patronize. He's right. We're going to get to that in just a second. But Chris, to that point, I'm not going to pull Chipotle into a political argument, but we do know that 9 states have banned gestation crates. We're going to be talking later this hour about New York State. There is a bill in the New York State Assembly that has not gotten out of the Ag Committee in the last couple of years that would ban it here. Is this a case where, you know, do you put your head down at Chipotle, do your thing, and try to lead by example, or would you like to see laws change?
It's a very good point that Tim's making, and we would like to see laws change, although we tend to be a little bit more heads down and working on our own thing. We have lent some support. There's been a bill kicking around in Washington for a few years now that's called the Preservation of Antibiotics for Medical Treatment Act, and this piece of legislation would effectively ban the subtherapeutic use of antibiotics in livestock farming, and we've supported some things like that. You know, ultimately, we've always believed that it's going to be the private sector that's going to drive change in this way. It's going to be consumers who want meat from animals that are raised right, and it's going to be restaurants like Chipotle. It's going to be supermarkets like Whole Foods. It's going to be meat producers like Nyman Ranch and Applegate Farms. Those are the people who are going to drive the change, not Washington.
Chris Arnold from Chipotle, I know it has been, like I said, a busy week, and we appreciate your time letting our listeners know about your company's practices this hour. And I'm sure we'll talk to you again, because these issues don't go away, but I think a lot of people feel like they're seeing you put your practice behind the words. So thanks for taking the time.
Well, and we certainly appreciate that. That's the reaction from customers. I mean, it was a hard decision to make, but the easy road would have been to substitute the pork that we were short, but that wasn't the right thing to do. And we're really pleased to see how our customers are reacting.
Very good. Cheers, Chris. Thanks, and we'll talk to you again.
Thank you, Evan.
Chris Arnold from Chipotle. Now, callers, if you're on the line, stay there, because we're about to turn the conversation to local farms and the kind of outlets that have been putting this into practice and put it into practice every day. And let me bring in Brad Marshall, who is the co-owner of The Piggery in Ithaca. Brad, thank you for taking the time to join us.
Thank you for having me on.
Well, I look forward to the conversation with you. We're going to be hearing from Happy Hooves Farm this hour, among others. And so before I turn back to the phones for more questions about or comments about animal conditions, tell us a little bit about what The Piggery is, Brad.
So The Piggery is it's a couple of things. It is The Piggery has its own pastured pork operation. And, you know, we're trying to really set the highest possible bar for how pigs are raised and the health qualities of the meat. The pigs are on rotationally grazed pastures. We're in upstate New York, so they're not on pastures the full year. In the winter, we're using some deep bedding systems to try to keep things as sanitary as possible, but the pigs always have access to green feeds. In the winter, that's usually hay or haylage, which is just a fermented hay, kind of like sauerkraut. And we're also using heritage breeds of hogs that give really delicious pork. So that's, taste is one of our major, it's not just about sustainability. It's also about taste. But the piggery also has a processing center in Ithaca, New York, and a retail shop. And we are beginning the process of wholesaling our pork products throughout the Northeast. We're fairly early on in that. We've only been wholesaling for about 6 to 8 months. But the product is starting to, what we would really like to do as a company is make well-raised pork more available to consumers. Because, the reality is right now, you can get well-raised pork, but you really have to go out of your way for it. And we're trying to make it a little more mainstream.
Talking to Brad Marshall from the Piggery in Ithaca, I'm going to ask Brad in a second to describe the difference between the conditions that he sees with their own animals and then the kind of conditions. We've been using the term gestation crates, but I know that in North Rose, Nancy has a comment about some of the conditions on factory farms. Go ahead, Nancy.
Hi, yes, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I am a vegetarian for a number of reasons, for ethical and moral reasons, but I am not opposed to, the carnivore lifestyle. I've been an activist on this subject for years because I live in Wayne County and am surrounded by factory farms, dairies, and pig farms. And what we see here is really a huge impact on the environment and on social justice, because the residents who live around factory farms are subject to environmental impacts, air quality, groundwater quality. The impacts of factory farming on our environment and human health is huge. And, the antibiotic resistant strains of illnesses, are a direct effect of the rampant use of antibiotics in factory farming, where they have to feed these animals antibiotics on a regular basis as a prophylactic measure, because they're in such confined areas that if any disease broke out, it would wipe out the whole herd. And these animals are raised in such horrendous conditions. They never see the light of day. They're treated, just horribly. And if we have any conscience at all as a culture, and want to be able to relate to our food, feel good about what we eat, we have to really take a look closely at how things are raised and how they're impacting us psychologically, emotionally, environmentally, physically, all those aspects, because it's all connected to the greater global health. So thanks for taking my call.
Nancy in North Rose, thank you so much for that call. First of all, Brad, some reaction to what Nancy said?
I absolutely agree with everything she just said. And like I say, that's why we raise the pig the way that we do. I also find the situation appalling. And, as a farmer, I can empathize with some of the practice used in the industry, because it's such an economically difficult thing to do, given the commodity prices that farmers get paid for pork. If the only market that you have available to you is a commodity market, those farms that are producing that pork are really in an economic bind. Like Chipotle was saying, we need to have better markets for well-raised pork. We need to have, pork processors and restaurants that are willing to pay a premium so that, better raised pork can be made a lot more broad-based. And that's one of the things that, that the piggery is hoping to do, like I say, by starting to wholesale products. And I see, you know, Chipotle is doing a similar thing, and there are, you know, there are a lot of other companies starting to do this, and I think it's really positive sign. And I think there's definitely sort of a groundswell of public opinion that doesn't like the factory system. But it's going to be a fight.
We're talking to Brad Marshall from the Piggery in Ithaca. If you're just joining us, we opened the conversation with a conversation with the communications director for Chipotle. They announced this week that a third of their restaurants across the country are not going to be offering pork products for at least a little while after one of their audits found that one of their pork suppliers was breaking the rules that Chipotle standards, I should say, when it came to the way animals are housed and treated. Pigs, we're talking about pigs, primarily gestation crates. And if you want to learn a little bit more about the way pigs are often raised in these kind of operations, I found an article from Mother Jones from July 2013 titled, "You Won't Believe What Pork Producers Do to Pregnant Pigs." And just let me read real briefly from that article. Quote, "Throughout their four-month pregnancies, many of the sows live in cages just large enough to contain their bodies. As the sows grow bigger, the tight confinement means they can lie face down but can't flop over onto their sides. The floors under these gestation crates are slotted so that urine and feces can slip through into vast cesspits. Immobilized above their own waist, the sows are exposed to high levels of ammonia, which cause respiratory problems. Just before they deliver, they're moved to farrowing crates in which they have just enough space to nurse. And once the piglets are weaned, it's back to the gestation crate for the breeding sow, which averages 2.5 pregnancies per year." That's the life of for many pigs that we end up eating. And Brad, I don't get the sense that most of us, myself included, I mean, I'm a meat eater. I don't get the sense that most people don't care. I get the sense that most people often don't know. And don't you?
Yes.
Do you tend to see that people's behavior changes once they know?
Absolutely. It's not a coincidence that people don't know how their meat is raised a lot of times. You know, those farms are very secretive. There's no open door policy. You know, they don't let a lot of people in and out. And for good reason, because I think they understand the PR implications of some of the practices that they use. Just to contrast that, we are using what is known as a Swedish style farrowing. What that means is that the pigs are in a, they're in a barn. It's a open, high ceilinged, airy barn. It's actually a hoop structure that lets in a lot of natural light. The barn has 10 large pens. The sows are free to come and go in and out of the pens as they please. They have a central feeder and waterer, so it keeps the pens very sanitary. They don't have to dung in the pens. And the whole barn is kept clean with deep bedding and straw. And the sows are live in a group setting, and they come and go as they please. And when they're ready to farrow, have their piglets, they will choose a box, and they'll go in the box, protect their piglets by keeping any other sows or any other larger pigs out of the box, and have their litter right there. And then once the piglets are old enough, the boxes are removed, and the group of sows all nurse their piglets together. So you'll have 8 to 12 sows all nursing piglets. And that is very similar to what you would see in a wild group of pigs, that idea of sort of a group of sows all raising their piglets together.
Let me get back to the phones. This is Jackie in Rochester. Go ahead, Jackie. You're on with Brad Marshall from the Piggery in Ithaca.
Hi. I do research on food waste, and as you know, and I think you've talked about on the show before, food waste is a huge problem in this country, and it creates environmental impacts as well as social impacts. Taking the generation of the food waste, the food that we waste, aside, and assuming that there is always going to be some portion of food waste or food byproducts, humans have always lived, you know, together with hogs over centuries. We've been feeding them food waste, and I just wanted to hear your comments on that as an option, because it would divert resources going into producing alternative feeds as well as solving a big problem in food waste disposal.
Jackie, thanks for the call. Brad, what do you think?
Sure, yeah. I mean, it's a really good point. And, you know, we try, we use, you know, waste products when we can. We, for instance, for a long time have fed whey to our pigs, which is a byproduct of yogurt or cheese making. We're not actually right now because our source has dried up. You know, we've also talked to breweries about using, you know, spent grains from their beer making operations. And I've even considered talking to wineries about using spent yeast out of their fermentation operations. It's definitely a topic that I'm very interested in. It's often hard to get, you know, the farm close enough to the source. The feeds are often sort of bulky and hard to deal with and heavy. And so it doesn't always, unfortunately, it doesn't always work economically in every situation. But it's definitely an area that we're very interested in.
In a moment, I'm going to bring in someone from Happy Hooves Farm out in Martville. But before we do that, I want to get a question for Brad from a listener who writes, how far can the Chipotle model go? This event shows the logistics problems of oversight when you scale a business up. At what point does it become impossible to systematically monitor suppliers while keeping overhead to the point where they can stay in business, let alone profit? He adds, even the piggery speaker could probably speak to that question on scale to some point. What do you think, Brad?
Yeah, it's an excellent point. You know, if we truly want to remake the food system and have, you know, sources of food that we can trust, it's a big undertaking, and it's not going to be perfect every time, and life isn't always perfect. But I don't think that means that it's not the right thing to do. You know, we have to go out and fight that battle every day. And I feel like in general, I know that as we've scaled up, we now have around 4 to 6 supplying farms at any given time. And, you know, I personally go to all of those farms and shake their hands, and I can confidently say that they're all doing a good job. You know, and I know them personally. As we get bigger and bigger, it is important to have a third-party auditor system, I think. Animal Welfare Approved is a third-party auditor that I think does a really good job of making sure that the farms under their inspection are doing what they say they're doing. But sure, I mean, you always have that risk. But all that we can do is, you know, trust but verify, I think.
Brad, can you hang in there for a little while longer
sure.
this hour? Because what I'd like to do is I need to get a 60-second break in. We've got more phone calls lighting up, and we're going to bring in the folks from Happy Hooves Farm. I've got a short list that's not a full list, but we've had some listeners saying, all right, great points here, but where can we find these kind of products that we feel good about locally? I've made up kind of a list. I'm going to get Brad's take, and Della from Happy Hooves Farm will help us fill out this list for you. And we'll talk about the state of legislation. We've had some questions about what's legal and what's not. So let's take a 60-second break. Your phone calls at 844-295-TALK and more conversation about the food we eat and the animals we raise next on Connections. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Some questions from some listeners about some of the farms in our area that we can feel good about. Let me kind of go down a quick list here. And we've been hearing from the folks at the Piggery in Ithaca. We also have Autumn's Harvest Farm in Romulus, Shannon Brook Farm in Watkins Glen, Bedient Farm in Middlesex, and Happy Hooves Organic Farm is in Martville, New York. It's about an hour east of Rochester, north of Auburn, near Red Creek. And I've got Della Jasterzab on the line with us from Happy Hooves. Della, thanks for taking the time. Are you there, Della? Once again, I feel like I've... Are you there now, Della? Can you hear me?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Thank you, Della. Della Jasterzab's on the line with us from Happy Hooves Organic Farm. How big of a farm, Della?
Well, we have 135 acres here, but we raise more than just pigs. We raise beef and poultry also. I go through roughly 50 pigs a year here, a very small operation.
And what kind of conditions for your pigs?
My pigs spend most of their lives outside. Some of them spend all of their lives outside. A number of them are born out here on pasture, and they're raised out there on pasture, and they're outside there on pasture until the day they, you know, go to the butcher. The only exception to that is if we have sows that are going to farrow in nasty weather in the winter. As the time approaches for them to farrow, and I can usually tell within a few hours that they're going to farrow,
mm-hmm.
I'll bring them into a deep packed barn setting where they farrow and raise their piglets for a few weeks until they go back outside once the piglets are big enough to deal with the winter.
Della, we often talk on this program about voting with your wallet, voting your values, and do you feel that... whether we are aware of it or not, when we make decisions about what to spend our money on when it comes to food, we might be complicit in supporting those kind of operations in which the animals are, again, some people say badly mistreated, others say torture. I mean, however you want to describe it, are we voting with our wallet?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Della Jasterzab on the line from Happy Hooves Organic Farm. And let's get some more of your phone calls in here as we talk about this. This is Fred in Rochester. Go ahead, Fred.
Yes, good afternoon. Good morning, Evan. I'm just curious about any contractual arrangements that are made, for instance, with Chipotle. Mm-hmm. When there's a violation found, is there any enforcement of a fine or a penalty? They sustain, I'm sure, some losses where anybody else would. So they go through their audit, they find out that the arrangement I made with the grower failed. Is that what happens?
Yeah, what they told us, and again, we opened the hour with a conversation with Chris Arnold, the communications director of Chipotle, after Chipotle yep. suspended essentially a third of their pork products around the country when they found out one of their suppliers was violating animal treatment standards. And we were led to assume essentially pigs in gestation crates and violating the Chipotle standards. What he told us, Fred, was that they have canceled contracts with suppliers in the past, and they would do that. In this case, their audit discovered the breach, essentially, that it's up to them on how to respond, and they've decided that they want to work with this particular supplier and say, these are our standards. We want you to change the practice back to what we had described, and we'll give you a chance to do that. They think the best way to affect change is to offer that chance to allow the supplier to change, as opposed to saying, if that's how you do it, we're walking away. So they're going to offer that chance to the supplier to change the conditions.
Well, thank you so much for that information. I appreciate your time.
Yeah, Fred, thank you for the call. I appreciate that. Della, what do you make of the Chipotle story?
Well, I think it's awesome that they've taken this step. I think it really is a good voice to that, what I'll call a movement towards consuming meat that's ethically raised. And I just think it's awesome that they're putting principles before profits in this case.
They said, Della, that there came a time, especially about 10, 15 years ago, when they really moved more towards these standards, that they did have to ask customers to pay more. And we have a question from a listener about what that really means. We've talked about the fact that if we want to vote with our wallet, occasionally we do need to pay more. It is cheaper to house animals, whether it's cows, chickens, or pigs especially, in small cramped spaces as opposed to what many would call more humane conditions. So can you help our listeners sort of understand, Della, what the difference in maybe, I don't know if it's price per pound or the difference in a range of price from, say, a factory-farmed pork products that might end up in a supermarket versus what we would buy at Happy Hooves or the Piggery or elsewhere?
Well, there is quite a difference in the price, and I sometimes am startled to see the price of particular pork cuts or any other meat cut, for that matter, in a grocery store that they're advertising, because I know that we couldn't even feed our animals at the price of some of this meat that's being sold in the grocery stores, which makes me wonder then what sort of quality are we getting from that meat. But the same people that often, not always, that you would see searching out the cheapest price in the grocery store for their meat are the same people who are putting things in their grocery cart that are not such a good value. And they don't seem to hesitate to spend their hard-earned food dollars on some of the stuff that they are spending it on, as opposed to a good quality meat that's been raised in an ethical manner. And that's definitely, as I understand it anyways, a difference in the way we view our food dollars in this country and the way some people who view their food dollars in other countries. In some places, they're used to spending a larger portion of their income on their food, and they wouldn't think of buying the meat that we're eating here, even though it's so cheap. And here, we expect it to be cheap. We are open to cutting food dollars in any way we can to lower our grocery bill each week, but not afraid to spend money on other things that we don't really need.
Sure. And let me read a statement from Wegmans, because we reached out to Wegmans as well on this issue with a question on choices, suppliers, prices, etc. Here's what Wegmans had to say. Quote, our meat merchandising team and our chief food scientists have been working with our conventional pork supplier and researching this issue for a few years now, and that has included on-site visits to pork producers. They've concluded that there are multiple sow housing systems that can provide high-quality care to gestating sows, but ultimately, the critical component in all housing systems is proper sow management by the farmer. And regardless of the system, it is also critical to continuously evaluate every system for needed improvements. Wegmans offers choice. In addition to conventional pork, we offer organic pork that is sourced exclusively from producers that utilize group housing systems. Della, what do you make of Wegman's statement?
Well, I know we're certified organic here, too. And if you're buying something that's been approved for a label for organic, it is, when it's meat, it should be having outdoor access. That's one of the conditions of meeting an organic standard. Animals have to have outdoor access. And I'm not so sure that there's anything wrong with Wegman's pork. I like Wegmans. I know a lot of people in Rochester are mad at Wegmans, but I think that they do the best they can in the situation they're in. They're serving, you know, lots of people, and just like Chipotle's, you know, they're still buying in pork, or they're still getting 2/3 of their pork supply. So I'm hoping that they're, of course, auditing those suppliers too. That's a lot of pork to supply, and I can't imagine scaling up to that point without certain management systems in place that would go far beyond what we do here, because we're just the small family farm. To scale up to that's going to require a lot of other help and infrastructure to do that. And, you know, pigs are really hard on the land. They really do some tearing up the land. When they're done with a field here, it needs, in order to use it for certain other purposes, it would need a major plow up and fitting and everything to get it back into condition to use it for something else. Because they're little diggers with those little noses there. they're terribly strong. It takes a really secure, solid strength in building to hold them. Or in fencing is, we use like double fencing that includes electric fencing on one side and the other fencing outside of that, because they'll dig that fence right up. They'll bury that fence. They're tough to deal with. So when you get into where you're trying to supply thousands of people that just walk in the door every day, I can't imagine how else they could possibly do it.
Talking to Della Jesterzab from Happy Hooves Organic Farm in Martville, New York. It's about an hour east of Rochester, north of Auburn. Let me turn the conversation back as well to Brad Marshall from The Piggery in Ithaca. And Brad, let me ask you to kind of also address the point that a caller had about what people should expect to pay. Is it, you know, is it twice the price of factory farmed pork? Is it less than that? I mean, is there a ballpark?
You know, it's going to be significantly more expensive. Let me put it that way. And it's a hard thing to measure. And I actually have a point that sort of that has to do with that. It also has to do with an earlier question about food waste. One of the things that drives up, if you're looking for a locally sourced pork, or any locally sourced meat, one of the things that drives the price up is we simply do not have the efficient processing infrastructure that exists in other areas of the country. You know, the big slaughterhouses, and trust me, I have myriad problems with the big slaughterhouses, but they are incredibly efficient, and they have markets for all of their byproducts. You know, the intestines get made into sausage casings. The trotters are the trotters are largely shipped to overseas. I know China buys a lot of them that go other places. You know, every part of the pig, they've got a market for, and that helps keep the processing costs really low. In fact, so low that it's almost not even reflected in the price of the pork. With the smaller processors we have in New York State, we don't have that luxury. We're paying a significant premium for processing, in addition to the fact that, you know, we have to pay a premium to the farms because the farms are following better protocols and the commodity standards. So there are cost differences up and down the food system. In addition to that, retailers think of, you know, a well-raised product as a sort of a luxury item, and so they mark it up more than they might commodity pork. So literally at every part in the chain, there is, unfortunately, an upcharge to get well-raised pork. Now, what we're doing to try to sort of counter that in our processing operation, we create a lot of, you know, pork trotters and pork skin and a lot of cutoffs that aren't necessarily saleable. We're trying to turn that into a line of locally sourced dog food to sort of help with, bring down the processing and also reuse what currently right now is going into the waste stream. So, you know, we have to do a little bit of out-of-the-box thinking and be a little more creative at the local level, you know, if we're going to solve some of these issues.
But always cheaper to buy right at the source, right?
Yes, it is. It is. But it's not always the most convenient to buy right at the source.
I certainly understand, as we talked to Brad Marshall and Della Jesterzab, two local farmers who raise pigs and in ways that are much more in line with what people would call sort of humane and more natural conditions. So let me hit some of the legal questions here. And if you want to know the power of sort of the factory farm, I guess you could call it a lobby, take a look at what happened in New Jersey. Now, there are 9 states in this country that ban gestation crates. New Jersey passed a bill to ban them there. New Jersey is not a big pig farming state, only about 9,000 pigs in the entire state. Chris Christie vetoed that gestation crate ban in November. He called it, quote, a solution in search of a problem. He said it's not an issue here. But a lot of people wondered, is Chris Christie making that veto with an eye toward Iowa? Iowa has 20 million pigs in that state. Their farms are generally very opposed to this kind of a ban. Many of their large operations use gestation crates. And if Chris Christie runs for president, he's going to need Iowa. The New York Times and Mark Bittman attacked Chris Christie on this issue, saying this was a presidential move. He bowed to a powerful lobby, and that obviously factory farm operations have a lot of political sway. In New York State, there is a similar bill that passed in New Jersey, and it has not gotten out of committee over the last several years. If you're curious, in the Assembly, it's A01656. In the Senate, it's S04987. And that bill would ban gestation crates, though it has not gotten out of the Ag Committee. Joe Morelli, who is the majority leader of the State Assembly, sent a comment through his staff saying, it is fair to say Assembly Leader Morelli would support the bill if it came to the floor. But the issue is it hasn't gotten to the floor and it doesn't look like it will. On Twitter, John asks us, is there a readily accessible list of who is on the New York Ag Committees for us to contact? John, I don't know offhand, but I would think so. If you just Google New York State Assembly Committee list, typically you can find who's on the Health Committee, on the Ag Committee, et cetera, et cetera. So you should be able to find that. But let me ask Della and Brad this. Della, do we need a law banning gestation crates and the like, or should it be consumer choice to seek out farms that are doing it a different way?
Consumer choice and farmer choice in how they handle their pigs. Consumers vote with their food dollars.
Okay. Brad, should there be a law banning that kind of practice?
I'm not a hugely political person. I will say that I would be in favor of that kind of law. I think ultimately consumer choice is going to be, you know, a much more... ultimately a more powerful voice in, you know, moving our food systems towards a more just, sustainable system. But I would absolutely be in favor of that type of law.
If you want to see more about the bills, we're going to do our best to kind of grab a link to the Assembly and the Senate versions if you want to see it about gestation crates. I'll throw it up on our Twitter page later, my Twitter page later today, when I can track it down. Sometimes the arcane system makes it hard to follow, but those bills do exist, and it's at Evan Dawson on Twitter. I'll throw those up this afternoon if you want to take a look at that. I want to start to wrap the conversation, and if you're just joining us, we're talking about the way pigs are raised and things you might not know about the way pigs are raised. We've been talking about it because the news peg was this week Chipotle restaurants decided that they were going to turn down pork from one of their suppliers after they found out through an audit that one of their pork suppliers was breaking the standards set by Chipotle when it came to animal treatment. And that means for a little while, no carnitas at about a third of the restaurants Chipotle's across the country. Chipotle joined us to say they feel that this is a worthwhile choice, that it's going to cost them in the short run, but, you know, frankly, it's become good publicity for them. And I think, Brad and Del, I'll start with you, Brad, doesn't Chipotle's story this week, doesn't it prove that it is good publicity and good for business to treat animals well?
I think it absolutely is. I think that in today's, if you want to be competitive in the food industry today, I think there's no better selling point for your product or differentiator for your product than to say that, you know, we're using meat or ingredients in general that have been ethically sourced, the animals have been treated well, the land has been treated well, and the people producing the food are being fairly compensated for their labor.
Della, yeah, what do you think?
I have to agree exactly with what Brad just said. And I think it is shameful that animals, and it's not just pigs, but many animals are raised in similar manner to supply a cheap food stream. The cost is just enormous, and the actual cost of raising this kind of food is what you would see reflected in buying products from small farms. You can visit the small farms and see how their animals are raised. You don't have to just pick it up at the grocery store and trust it and close your eyes. Basically, people just close their eyes to that and say, I don't want to know, because they just want it at a lower cost. And certainly you can visit these farms that are in the areas and see how their animals are raised and feel good about what you're eating. You're spending more, but if you're careful with how you use what you spent your money on, you can make it go further. In the long run, it's going to be possibly more nutritious, they believe now, than some of what's raised in factory farms. It just lacks the same nutrition that you're going to get from a smaller, better feeding program. And so really, you're making out like even on your dollar when you spend it. When you spend a couple dollars more here than you would over there, you're getting something of a better quality and nutrition, and at a cost that actually reflects the cost of raising that meat,
right,
and not, you know, something else.
Fred Forsberg from Honey Hill Organic told us last month, as we talked about chickens in sort of the same kind of a conversation, and I actually don't know if Honey Hill raises pigs, but Fred Forsberg told us that, you ought to expect farms to say yes when you want to go tour. I mean, as long as you're not showing up unannounced. Fred says if you show up unannounced, we'll put you to work. But if you make an appointment, we want you to see the way we do things. So let me wrap the conversation with this. Autumn's Harvest Farm in Romulus, Shannon Brook Farm in Watkins Glen, Bedient Farm in Middlesex, Happy Hooves is out in Martville, in Ithaca, the Piggery. Brad, anything I'm missing when it comes to farms? I'm sure I am, and I apologize. I'm trying to create a list here for our listeners who want to know exactly where can I go to get pork I feel good about. Anything else I'm missing?
Sure, yeah. I would throw into the mix Kingbird Farm, which is, I am Berkshire, New York, I believe.
Southeast of Ithaca, yep.
Interbrook Farm is in Interlake in New York, and Van Noble Farms is right here in Enfield, New York, near Ithaca. Just off the top of my head, J&D Farms is another great operation over on the other side of Cortland.
All right, so you can find it. Brad, where do they find the Piggery online?
The Piggery is online at www.thepiggery.net, and if people really want to support the Piggery product line, they can ask for it at their local retailer, grocery store, supermarket, co-op, any kind of store where food is sold.
Yep.
Ask if they would consider carrying Piggery products.
Brad, thanks for taking the time for us today.
Absolutely.
Della, real quickly, Happy Hooves online where?
Better Beef For You. That's number 4, letter U. BetterBeefForYou.com. And find us at the farmer's markets in Rochester.
Yeah, the Brighton Farmer's Market, right?
Yes.
Thank you, Della. Thanks for taking the time for us.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Great discussion this hour on the way we treat the animals we eat. Short break, and we're looking at state business next hour on Connections.